Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Stoke the Fire. As always, we're your hosts, Matt Stocks and Jesse Leach. Jesse, you may have noticed a different background going on today.
I do notice it. It's the first time on this podcast you have a different background.
Well, it's actually the second. We spoke to your dad when I was house sitting for my friend Frank Turner.
Oh, that's right.
I was in his study then, but today I'm in my friend Aid's house in Moseley. I'm in the process of moving from Birmingham to Bristol. So this week is kind of my last week in Birmingham. So I currently don't have a home. So I'm staying right here. This is my bedroom that we're in now. I'm on the bed.
Yes, I love it. Vagabond style.
Full on gypsy life. Here's something I want to mention and touch upon briefly before we bring on our amazing guest this week. If I sound different as well to anybody listening, it's because I've got my travel set up. So apologies if the mic sounds slightly different to usual. I was thinking, man, like we record these every week and a week's not a long time at all. We touch base, you know, very regularly. We're always circling back around. Maybe you can share your thoughts on this. It feels to me like in between each chat that we have, so much in life happens and so much changes. And I almost feel like a different person practically every time we sit down and talk. It just feels like in the 5 to 6 days in between our chats, like there's just a whirlwind of stuff going on. Are you picking up on that at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And yesterday I had one of those reawakening days. You know, I just needed, I've been kind of in a funk. But yeah, I agree completely. I think, I don't know, it's weird just how life is right now. I think for both of us, a lot of changes, mentally, physically.
There's a freeze, dude.
So annoying. I don't get it.
Here we go.
Freeze.
I got you. You're back in the room.
Okay. Yeah, no, a lot has happened for sure. But I think that, you know, life is just a journey. It's a beautiful thing. It's better than being stagnant, you know, and staying in the same place. So yeah, I love it. Let's keep moving, man. How about yourself?
I feel like everybody listening is probably, you know, in the same boat as well, because it just is a crazy time for the world, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And everybody in it at the moment. And sometimes growth and change is difficult and it's hard, but it's constant and it's necessary. And I'm learning more that if you lean into it and embrace it, then good things come out of it.
Yeah. And I think to me, that's a perfect segue into our guest, because looking him up and listening to his catalog of music from the beginning to where he's at now, to his story that he's spent many stories. I feel like he's lived a few lifetimes. The one thing I really gathered and sort of the takeaway from his life and his work is through his pain, through his struggles, he's just has a spirit of optimism that just runs throughout all of the things he does. Even sonically, his music, when the lyrics are sort of sad or, you know, despondent sounding, the music is still uplifting. It's a very unique style of music and a very unique human being. I've really enjoyed researching him and watching some of the interviews that you've done actually in the past. And for anyone who's listening, I think a perfect prequel to this would be to go back and listen to the interview you did with him on Life in the Stocks, because I think it's a brilliant interview, really well spoken. It's a really good vibe. You feel like you're in the room hanging out with you guys. So yeah, I'm excited to get into this.
Yeah, we actually recorded that chat in his van when he was on tour, and the rest of his band were in the van in the front seats, like right there. It was a beautiful chat. It was an early one. It was one which, like your episode, set the tone very early on for my podcast, Life in the Stocks. We got super deep. I'm sure we're going to get even more deep today like we do. here on Stoke the Fire. So without further ado, please welcome onto the show, ladies and gentlemen, my good friend, and I'm sure Jesse's soon-to-be new friend, Ryan Hamilton. Ryan, come on down.
Did I do it right? Am I
You're
on?
In. You're in.
What's up, guys?
How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm in the middle of nowhere, Texas, so I'm amazed the internet's working at all.
Well, I'm sure we'll have a few more breakdowns before the end of the show, but we'll keep soldiering on regardless, like we always do. I'm really pleased to get you two together because both of you, for me, have always been really kind of vocal and outspoken advocates of mental health. You both deal with it very directly in your art and also in your, you know, social media presence. It's something that I think you really share a kindred spirit there. You both recently went through a fairly seismic life change in the form of a divorce as well. So there's some common ground there, which I'm sure we'll discuss. But Ryan, you mentioned Texas there, and that's where I'd like to begin, if that's cool with you, because I was just out there. I had a super amazing time. And I would love for you, as somebody who's a born and raised Texas boy, to give a little bit of background as to your childhood and growing up in that part of the world and how it shaped your worldview, because I do really feel like Texas gets a bit of a bad rep. And, you know, it can be kind of like disparagingly referred to as this Trump state. And I had nothing but a beautiful time there. Everybody was warm and generous. Jesse and I have spoken about his experiences there. He had the same thing to say. So as a local, as a native to that part of the world, what does that region and state mean to you? What are the characters of it, and how did it shape you as a young man growing up there?
Yeah, good question. And a lot of people, when they think of Texas, they think of it a certain way. And I'm glad both you guys have spent some time here, so you know better. But there's a movie called Friday Night Lights that came out, I don't know, 20 years ago, probably now. It was also a TV show. That's very much how I grew up. When I saw that movie, I was just like, God, they nailed my childhood, really my high school experience. But it's all about small town Texas football, high school football, these guys in, you know, in high school who are the quarterback or the stars of the team are like celebrities in those little towns. So you have this very hardcore, intense community thing that happens when you're from Texas, and everybody, it feels like one big family in a way. Politically, I mean, Matt will tell you, I'm sure Jesse, you know this too, it's very different where I'm from, just outside of Fort Worth, and then Austin. Austin is its own animal that I love. I love Austin. But the thing with Texas is there's a sense of pride that a lot of places in the world have. There's this special kind of Texas pride thing where you're proud to be from here. You're proud to, you know, have that thing that we all grow up with, especially in the smaller towns. But it definitely shapes you in the way where most of us go to church two or three times a week whenever you grow up here in conservative churches, Church of Christ, where I went, or Baptist or Methodist, things like that. You have that in combination with everybody drinking a lot and going to football games, and they love rock and roll here and country, of course, you know. You don't even really think about what country music does to you when you're from here because you're around it all the time. So I don't think I ever bought a country record, maybe a couple when I was little, but I know all those songs because they're everywhere all the time. So it's a really cool combination of everybody having a good time, everybody loving each other, and then, you know, getting drunk and getting in a fist fight on a Saturday night and getting up and going to... Yeah, and then getting up and going to church together on Sunday. That's kind of what it's like.
That's awesome. Yeah, and they say everything's bigger in Texas, right? I love that phrase. It's so funny because I almost feel like Texas can be its own country, really. I mean, you could take that and separate it from the United States. It could stand on its own because of the pride of the place. And people like they... Music, as far as music fans go, just for metal, I mean, I can't really speak for any type of music, but for metal, they go crazy in Texas. We always have great shows there.
Yeah, there's, as far as, you know, rock and roll all the way up and down the line, you know, pop rock up to more like what, you know, the world you run around in, they love it here. They do. They get really excited. And I went to a couple of those shows when I was a teenager, and they're fun.
How important are Pantera to Texas? Did they come?
Oh my God!
Did they put metal on the map in that state?
Yeah, Pantera and Drowning Pool probably were the two that, I mean, that whole thing, that was huge here. And I was lucky enough to be a teenager when all that was really going nuts and get to experience some of that. But Pantera is probably the one, right? Like, that's got to be. And it's so sad what happened. But it's going to be hard to find a better example of, you know, a big or important influence from Texas in that scene.
I would have to go with ZZ Top overall, just period.
Yeah.
Because that band just kicked off so many other bands. I don't think some metal bands would even exist without ZZ Top. And I, you know, love the documentary, The Little Band from Texas. Like, ZZ Top all the way, man. What an incredible band. And, you know, for anyone listening, if you haven't gone back and listened to their early, they were huge in the 80s with their hits, but the early stuff, man, Tres Amigos, what? It's incredible. Yeah. So that would be, when I think of Texas, I think it's ZZ Top, man.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point. And a lot of people won't connect. They won't go, okay, so they started talking about Pantera and they landed on ZZ Top. How does that happen? But it makes total sense. It makes absolute sense. That's a really good example.
Well, speaking of ZZ Top, very quickly, you've shaved your beard off, Ryan. Last time I saw you had a big beard. It's gone.
You know, it was an accident. I had a little disagreement with my beard trimmers. So it happens. And it's fine. I'll have a face vacation. It'll be no big deal. But yeah, I look like a child.
Now you look dapper. You look dapper. You look good, man.
Thank you. That's nice.
What are you going to say, Jesse?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, what was I going to say? You know, I don't know, but I do know where I'm going. Your recent single, you had a lyric that just sort of struck me. And it really sort of summed up, if I could be so bold, almost your entire career. And the lyric is, "I've got a big heart covered in big scars." And as soon as I heard that lyric, I was like, that's totally me. That's my life. And the stuff that you've been through to where you are now. And like I said, at the top of the show, your optimism in life seems to continue to ring true. And I can relate to that so much. I can relate to what you've been through and how you put it through your music and how even sonically there's optimism in the chords that you choose, even when you're writing about sad things. Very unique. And it was a total pleasure to like kind of dive into your catalog. But I guess for me, what I really want to get out of this selfishly is your journey and having to deal with heartache and some crazy shit. I mean, the fact that you wrote a record with a partner about your breakup, it just publicly out there for the world to hear, and it became a record and became this thing. Like, I'm just astounded by that, number one. And then going full circle to what you've recently been through, where do you even start with that? I'm so impressed, and I feel such a solidarity with you because of what you've been through.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate that.
I don't even know what the question is, but man, that to me just hit me right in the face. Like, wow, that's incredible.
I think, Ryan, you should definitely, if you don't mind doing so, contextualize that whole smile saga of your life, which is so insane and had to be so character forming. And with the benefit of like time, hopefully hilarious in hindsight too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll start by saying this. They were going to make a movie about it. People said, been saying forever, you should make a movie. They finally started it right before COVID.
Oh, wow.
And then it got shut down. So, story of my life, really, but that's fine.
It'll come back around. That story's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so really long story short-ish. I was in a band a long time ago, almost 20 years ago now, which is crazy. I met this girl in Dallas. We were both in other bands. We fell in love. We were like, let's do some songs together. It was kind of sweet. We got engaged and became very popular in Texas. They started playing us on a radio station that no longer exists, but that was very influential called The Edge in Dallas. And there's a show called The Adventure Club, which if you got on The Adventure Club when radio was what radio used to be, that was, everyone paid attention. I would equate it to K-Rock or something like that. You get on this particular show in Dallas, and the DJ there named Josh Venable, he played us, when he started playing us, he would play us every week on that show, and it just went nuts. And we quit our other bands. We got signed really fast, which was weird. We actually got courted, flown around, the whole thing. It's like, oh shit, it's like, this is gonna happen. And it's gonna happen with the girl that I love, which was cool. But she, during the course of all the insanity and becoming popular, and we still weren't able to like do it full time. We still had our regular jobs. We were barely hanging on to our regular jobs, but we had this kind of normal life where we lived together, and then we would go on tour and do this crazy thing. So it was wild trying to do all of it and be okay. Well, she cheated on me. When I say that and people don't know, they're like, oh, is he allowed to say that out loud? It's like, yes, it's like, it's public knowledge. It's not a big deal that I'm saying it now. It's a long time ago. But when that happened, it was big news. She did it very publicly with a guy in another band, and it was in the paper. It was like so stupid the way it went down. And for me, it was, well, that's it. The band's over. My dream's done. I was very obviously hurt because I thought I was going to marry her. And I started writing these songs. Well, it's just going to be one song, really. Started writing these songs to show her, like, look what you did to me. You really hurt me. These really pointed songs. And she wasn't talking to me. So I emailed her one song. I don't even remember which one it was. But I was waiting on her response. And what her response was is what makes this whole thing go so crazy, is instead of being mad and going, fuck you, she recorded a piano part and sang a harmony and sent it back. And I was just like, well, I didn't get you with that one. I'll get you with another one. And this went on for a few songs. And those songs ended up getting back to our record label. And they went, hey, if you guys could stay together, we actually think this could be really successful. Like, people would love this. Like, her name's Jen C. Like, Jen C, can you sing the, I know these songs are about how you cheated on him, but can you play piano and sing harmony and go back on tour? Like, are we okay to do this? And they dangle all of that. Like, this could be really great. You'll be naked in the music video, which we were. You'll be naked on the cover of the album. They're like, and I'm like, you know, losing my mind. I had a total breakdown. I shaved my head. I was like, I'm going to kill myself. It was all very like, no. But the flip side of all of that is your dreams are going to come true. We're going to send you on tour. You're going to make more money and be more successful than ever if you can do this. And I said, yes. I mean, like I told Matt a long time ago, it's just as much on me as it is anybody else, because I agreed. It's like, yes, I'll do it.
Yeah. You allowed that pain to sort of linger in your life. And, you know, I met you talking about having him on tour and sleeping in a bunk near you. I was just like flabbergasted by that. But there's really an analogy, I think, for your music and for what you've been through with allowing that to happen and then being able to withstand that at least for a little while before it imploded. But that's incredible. I don't think I've ever heard of that. And for something, and those songs are good. Like, and it's odd too, because they're upbeat, like as sad as they are, there's still like an upbeatness to them. And to me, that just, there's such an analogy of like your music and what you've been through in that story. I've never heard anything like that in my life. I was blown away by that.
Well, I didn't realize, because I was in the middle of it, how much it was affecting me and, you know, how much I was going to talk about it in therapy after. But, you know, it was just like, I was just trying to keep up, and it was really fucking me up. And of course that band had an expiration date. But I mean, we did our best for as long as we could. I stayed in there as long as I could. We actually put out one more
shows, man. Like playing those songs live. How was that?
We wouldn't even make it through some, and that would be the thing. In the end, some people would come to see if we would even make it through. I mean, there was a show in Roswell, New Mexico, where Jency very calmly, we're in the middle of the show. She had a Fender Rhodes piano. My music nerd friends will appreciate what those look like. And they're a lot to deal with. So she very calmly unplugged the cable to her Fender Rhodes, wrapped the cable up. I'm still playing the song. And then she threw the cable at me like a Frisbee. So this thing comes flying at me and I like dodge it and finish the song. She walks off stage. And that's just what it was like. And then we got in the van and went to the next one.
Wow. It reminds me of like the Gallagher, Nolan, from the Gallagher.
Liam.
Yeah. And then, you know, I went to go see this band that I love, the Brian Jonestown Massacre. And
love them.
It's one of those things too, where you just don't know like what's going to happen and people kind of go for the entertainment value as well. But I think that speaks volumes to like wanting success, number one. And number two, the record industry sort of enabling toxic behavior like they always do, because they know it's going to make money for them somehow. And you being young and like having that ambition, you're like, let's just do it, ride or die. And yeah, I think that speaks volumes for your ambition, but it also speaks volumes for the toxicity of the record industry to be able to like do that to a couple. It's just nuts.
Dude, it's brutal. And what we found out when we started going through the legalities of them making a documentary about it is, and I didn't know this until the lawyer told me when they started making the film, is that that album, those songs that I was emailing her, those same songs that were straight out of my everything, I will never get them back. They own the master recordings in perpetuity forever. There's no sunset clause. There's no anything like that. My music friends will appreciate the term sunset clause, which is the most bullshit thing ever. But I can't record those songs. I can't put out a live record with those songs. I can't be associated with those songs in any way. The most personal thing, really, I kind of got conned into doing, but I agreed to. I'll never get them back. They own them forever. If there's a soundtrack with a Smile Smile documentary, I have to find other people to essentially cover the songs. I can't
play them.
And if we want the actual songs in the documentary, I have to pay my record label to use my songs.
How the hell? That's just the next level, dude. That's next level. And not even with like me, dude. You've had so many battles to get to where you are, man.
Yeah, it's been rough.
But you still have you maintain a fairly positive aura. It's impressive.
Well, thank you. I think that probably comes from what we talked about before, my childhood and that juxtaposition of fist fight Saturday, church on Sunday. It's just like,
is it that whole don't fuck with Texas thing? You just keep going no matter what.
Yeah, part of me wants to win.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm just like, okay, music industry, fuck you, I'll do this by myself, watch, I'm gonna win. I'm gonna beat all the people that tried to blackball me and smile and then all the people that tried to blackball me and fuck me up in the next project. I'm just like, I'm going to show all of you that I have what it takes. I don't need a gimmick. I don't need whatever. And that is probably what drives me. And it's not revenge. It's not anything negative. It's a positive kind of like, I got this. You think I don't have what it takes and I can't do this on my own and I need you or whatever, you know, you can fuck off, because I don't know. I don't know why I'm that way, but I just am. I'm like, I'm going to show everybody. And I mean, after your first experience in the record business being Smile, Smile, and that traveling circus soap opera that, you know, was deemed a failure because we only generated, you know, several hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was like, you really didn't make us that 10 to 20, 100 million we were hoping for. You only sold however many thousands of copies. It wasn't the millions. So you're a failure, and good luck out there.
Yeah, I hate that about the record industry, and it makes you question yourself, and you have to hold on to your artistic integrity and sort of like you have to be your own champion, really. I think at the end of the day, whether you're working with a band or as a solo, especially as a solo artist, I can't even imagine that. I'm just not enough to get through that.
We keep losing you, Jesse. It's
Jesse, we lost you. We lost you just for a second there, and that was probably something amazing that you just said. And we missed.
Why is it. am I back in the internet? What is going on?
You're not paying your bills. Is that what it is?
Yeah, no. We recently had storms up here in the Catskills, so maybe that has something to do with it. But it's a calm, beautiful day right now. That sucks. What was I saying? What a bummer.
Basically, the music business is really difficult.
Yeah, I got screwed out of a deal when I was younger too, and it sort of soured me. And you know, I was saying basically, you got to be your own sort of cheerleader, and that's just sheer determination. That's what keeps me going too. You know, I've been in difficult situations where people that surrounded me, you know, I wanted more out of them. I wanted them to encourage me more. But at the end of the day, it's just you against yourself. And people, you measure yourself with success. And I think that's such a slippery slope, you know, because you didn't see the millions that they wanted. They didn't see it as success. And it does affect you in one way or another when people are surrounding you and they wanted you to do more and you didn't do it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you've got to be on your own team and push yourself. And I see that you've done that and through a plethora of projects. And anyone who doesn't know your catalog, to go back and to see what you've done over the years, it's incredible, man.
Like, oh, thank you. That's
diverse, amazing. Really good songwriting and unique. You definitely have a unique sound. I can't put my finger on it. It was like, I heard some Wilco in there. I heard, I had a whole thing in my head when I was listening to you earlier. I was in the grocery store and I had headphones on. It'll come back to me, but just the diversity you have is awesome. And anyone who doesn't know your music, I urge you to go and just start from Smile Smile and go all the way up through your catalog.
Thank you.
I love what you're doing now with your solo stuff too. It's just it's really cool stuff. And your lyrics are clever. It's great. And you've taken your pain, man, and you've made it into art. And to me, that's what it's all about right there.
Thanks, man. It's important. I think if you're going to do this, you kind of have a choice in a way. If you want to be a pop star and you want to have a song that's going to be a hit, then go try and write a hit. And then the other side of that is if you want to be a songwriter and you really want to hone that craft, I think you learn that to tell your own truth in a song, people feel that and they hear that, they relate to that. And some people, you know, they'd rather listen to something fun and poppy. And we all have those times and those moods where you just want to have a good time and not think too hard or not whatever. But I think as a songwriter, for me, it's important to be honest because I want people to believe me. I don't know why that feels important as a songwriter. Or, I mean, maybe Jesse, you feel that too. But, you know, there's when you're an artist, you want people to believe you. It's like, oh, he or they mean that like that. And I get it. And that's become very important to me probably since I started writing songs.
I guess it's just a byproduct of being an artist, you know, and what kind of an artist you are. Because there are musicians who can just write songs and they just count their money and they're like,
oh, yeah.
And they're stoked. And then there's people who really have a need to get a message across. And, you know, the fact that, and I'd love to get into this too, the fact that you went through a divorce and you put out a little documentary on your YouTube channel, sort of just walking through your pain and showing people how you dealt with that and how you coped with it. And you did it with music, but you also did it just as a person in front of a camera and doing a dialogue. It was very vulnerable. And I can relate to that because I feel like I did that myself when I went through my divorce. It was my only way to really come to terms with it all. And I think it's speaks volumes about your music too. You know, you live it. It's not fake. It comes across very, very genuine. And I think that's the charming part of that. And you were saying how, you know, writing a pop song and having a hit, like I would much rather be in my again.
Oh, Jesse.
I would much rather be.
I'd much rather be.
A musician that has to struggle and is in a sort of a lesser position with my heart on my sleeve than have the money and sort of like try to write a song that's going to be a hit.
Yeah. You know?
And that being said, to piggyback on top of all of that, you still have hooks. You still have a poppy element. You have the, I hear Beach Boys in some of your stuff. Well, like it, you're able to put across your message, but still have it be sort of like hooky and poppy at the same time. It's brilliant.
Well, thank you. It's, you know, I'm doing okay, but, and I'm proud of everything I've done, and I haven't, like, I'm happy with my life. I don't want anybody to think I'm anything less than thankful, but there is a level of wanting to have a successful song on the radio, of course, so that plays into it. And, you know, I love Tom Petty, and I have those heroes, Bob Dylan, whoever, and, you know, they've had big commercial success, and they're, you know, some of the best songwriters of all time. So there's that combination, and I admire those people. And I'm thankful to be able to pay my bills. It would be nice to sit down and go, I'm going to write a hit. Like, I'm just going to do it, whatever it is. It's going to be the most surface level, whatever, and everybody's going to love it. And sometimes I wish I was more like that, but that kind of fades. I appreciate you saying that. That means more to me than, you know, more money in the bank just for somebody to, you know, go, hey, this guy's a good songwriter. I believe what he's saying, and it's nice to listen to. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, yeah. Speaking of good songs and Tom Petty, why don't you share the Tom Petty story that you told me, Ryan?
Okay. Yeah. So Tom Petty.
I'll name drop for you.
Yeah.
Tom Petty.
Tom Petty is somebody I've always loved. And to get compared to him when I started playing music was just an accident. I never tried to sound like him or the Heartbreakers, but they're a big influence in what I do. So I can't help it. And I'm from the South, and I have a whiny voice because I'm from the South. This is how some of us sound here. But Tom Petty was, there's a friend of a friend who has a car service. I'm trying to get this right. I've told this story a little bit. So a friend of a friend has a car service, and Tom Petty would hire this car service whenever they would go play somewhere and maybe they would have a day off. And he liked cool old cars, and this guy would drive him around and go do whatever, you know, Tom wanted to do that day. So, excuse me. This guy gets hired to drive Tom around. He's got a cool old car, but he also has a kid who's in school, and he asks his son, hey, I'm going to drive Tom Petty around today. Do you want to come with us? Like, what do you think? Cool old, I think it was a Cadillac or something with bench seats. So it went all the way across the front. You know what I mean? Cool old car. The kid says yes. They go. This guy and his son are in the front seat. They pick Tom Petty up. The kid starts to get out. I love this part of the story, and I forget to tell it sometimes. And Tom Petty says, no. I'll sit in the back. So he sits in the back of this old school Cadillac and puts his arms on the front seat like a kid. And I just think that's so cool. That visual of Tom Petty in the back, like, hey guys, where are we going? So they're talking and, you know, going about their day. And the kid had his phone or iPod or whatever, and they're listening to music and they're talking. And finally, Tom Petty, as they're running errands this day, stops the conversation. Says, hold on a second. Who is this? As far as the music in the car. And it was me. And he was like, this is really good. Who's this guy? And he wanted to know about me and, you know, what the deal was. And I didn't find that out until the day that he died. So there was apparently this guy was like, I keep meaning to tell you, and, you know, they may get in touch, or we don't really know, but, you know, he's interested and he heard you and he likes you. And the guy was all apologies whenever he got in touch with me. He's like, I wanted to tell you this. I'm sorry to tell you now, but like, now you know he liked at least one of your songs. And, oh, I feel like I'm getting a little bit emotional now, but that story, it wrecked just my whole world. That it was on the day he died, which nobody was really expecting. And but I'll carry that with me forever.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is something I'd like to talk to you both about, which you kind of touched on a moment ago, Jesse. For me, the pair of you, more so than anyone I know, expose yourselves with such levels of vulnerability that I think is so rare in the entertainment industry. I think you both just wear your heart on your sleeve, particularly with your use of social media. And you'll say, like, this is where I'm at. This is where I've been through. Jesse, you mentioned the documentary Ryan made through his divorce. I wonder if the pair of you could jam a little bit of some of your thoughts on the importance for both of you of doing that, what you've gotten out of doing it, and what you see perhaps that it maybe does to help others. Because you are both the most vulnerable dudes I know, I think, in a world where a lot of people keep a lot of their cards close to their chest and are, you know, perhaps afraid to be real to such an extent.
Yeah, I think go ahead. No, you go. No, I'm not going to fight.
Jesse, you can give yourself some of your Wi-Fi time to charge up.
Yeah. Ready to go.
All I was going to say is, first of all, you have to have very thick skin, because it's a double-edged sword. You put yourself out there in a way where you're putting it all out there. You better be ready for the good and the bad. And if you can't handle it, the disadvantage of putting it all out there is that people then have that information. They have it all to twist it and to use it against you and to call you whatever they want to call you. So I'm sure Jesse would agree that while it feels good to share and have that support and make somebody else feel better, you should really, if somebody else is watching this or they hear this and they go, I'm going to be that way, just prepare yourself. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. You're going to piss some people off. But I would say it's worth it. Just so far beyond worth it for me and for anybody who can relate. And I'm proud to be that way. I come from the school of my friend Amanda Palmer, and she's been amazing for me on that level and showing me, like, it's okay to be a certain way. And Jesse, I'd love your thoughts as far as, like, do you have that moment of pause where you're like, okay, I'm going to say this shit and that some people are going to let me have it, but I'm going to say it anyway? Or do you just do it and you don't really think about it?
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. I feel like I was a lot more willing to sort of share, almost to the point of oversharing, years ago.
Same.
And of course, you're
going to have to get a rewind, Jesse. Sorry, dude.
Oh, man.
There you go. You're okay now.
It's okay. We can save these quick.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's kind of a mixed bag as far as sharing on social media. And I think, you know, many years ago, I would overshare, and then going through the divorce and also just having two managers that are amazing. They're like, you know, my good friends as well, as sort of like almost father figures in a way. And they've helped me to sort of dial it back and be cautious about it, because I do think it's important to share, but there are certain things you should probably just keep to yourself. So I've gotten a little more selective with it. And I think for me, I try to keep it more general as far as like talking about depression, talking about anxiety, going through these things, but not giving away too much. Mm. You know, even in the documentary you made, you didn't go into detail about what happened with your divorce. You just talk about, I'm going through it. This is how I'm coping. And that's kind of where I've been at with how I deal with my depression and stuff. For example, yesterday, or, you know, when this podcast airs, it'll be about a week or so ago, but I had a moment out in the woods and I just needed to reconnect with myself and breathe and kind of coming out of a funk and trying to find inspiration again. And I had that moment but then I just felt this need. And I think this is, to answer your question, Matt, I don't even feel like I have a choice. I can't not share.
Yeah.
I can't do it, because I feel like if I'm withholding some of this information, I'm not sharing this gift, this thing that I have that I know helps people.
Yeah.
And I would feel like I wouldn't be doing my job by not sharing, because I know people tell me all the time that they can relate to my lyrics or me being an advocate for mental health. But on the flip side of it, selfishly, it helps me. Mm. When I share and I sort of talk about what I'm going through as I'm talking it into a recorder or on a video, I'm doing self-realization. So it's kind of a mixed bag of, like, I feel the need to do it, but I also just am, and I'm pretty.
Sorry, dude. I also just.
What?
That's where we lost.
Oh, you. Come on! This keeps happening. I feel, dude. What is going on? I gotta call my internet company. Yeah, I just feel a deep need to do it regardless. I think it's good therapy, and it's also just something that I think is a part of what I have to do in this planet. And I don't say that out of ego. I say it strictly out of like the realization of the gift of being vulnerable and what that can do for people.
Yeah. Well, you know, there will absolutely be people that watch this, and I've been honest and open my entire career, you know, but there will be people that watch this and go, he's full of shit, you know what I mean, that guy, don't believe anything he says. And it's so funny to me that you're always going to have those people no matter what. And that's the big lesson I've had to learn, is that it is for me also, it is for, I'm gonna be this way, I've proven it, as you have too. I'm gonna keep being that way and this way, even if I've learned to edit a little bit, as you have, which is important. I think that's just a sign of growth. That you're still, just for whatever reason, there are these people that go, you know, oh God, shut up, or you're full of shit, or whatever it is. And that to me has been the only thing. It hasn't even really been a struggle. I think it's just been a surprise to have to navigate that, where you just like lay yourself out there and they can't wait to shit all over it. And, it's just, it feels like a fight that's worth it. It's like, you know, because you're fighting with yourself in a way. But it's like, I don't know. Every time I share, it feels like the good guy is kind of doing what the good thing is. Like, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you're opening and you're being honest in a world where you can't say anything without being canceled. Or, you know, people are in so much trouble in today's world with saying things and them getting twisted. But
people are just so disingenuous on social media as well, aren't they? 90% of people who present a version of themselves online aren't presenting an authentic version. It's often exaggerated or just completely insincere. And I do think being real and being open, especially online in today's world, is rare. That you might have two people that go, this guy's full of shit, I wish he'd shut up. But for every two that think that, there's two that think, he's really changed my thoughts on this and inspired me to be more open in my life. So it totally balances it out. And it is a good fight, and it is worth fighting, I think.
Agreed. It's like, to me, it's the analogy of playing a sold-out show somewhere, and there's one person in the front on their phone. And you're just like, in your mind, you're like, I'm not going to look at the one person on their phone. Jesse knows exactly what I'm talking about. Matt, you probably do too. You just can't. It's this conversation with yourself where you're trying to focus on the people, but you can see it, and it's fucking right there, the person. It's like, whatever, their friend brought them, they don't know anything, they don't know the songs, and you just can't with the one person.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with that person, though. Like, the person who's complaining or like saying that you're vulnerable, it's because of their own shit. It has nothing to do with
it. Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of where the angle I've chosen to take is, like, when people sling insults at me or call me a pussy or whatever, I'm like, that's not me. That's you.
that's true. That's true.
Ryan, when you did break up with your ex-wife, you basically got in your van and you drove across America. I would love to hear, you know, your account of that journey, you know, both from like an emotional standpoint, a spiritual standpoint, just a geographical, like the shit you saw, the stuff that you learned, because, you know, America, for anybody that doesn't live there, has always been this great land of freedom and adventure. And you went out there and got lost to find yourself, didn't you, in the most pure of ways?
I did. My family must have thought I was insane, because I like took the band van and gutted the back of it. I'm just like, guys, I put a bed back here and a couple things. I'm going to be gone for a few months, but I'll probably be fine. And it was like in the middle, like my divorce, just, it wasn't even legally done yet. It was like, they were worried about me. I have a really great family, and To make that decision, first of all, was just like, is he driving into the desert to like disappear or do something terrible? So there was a level of worry from my family and those who loved me that actually made me kind of go, is this the right thing to do? But then I just knew. I'm actually glad I had that moment to then go, you know what? I have to do this. I don't know why. But I converted the back of the band van into more like a van. I was watching YouTube van life videos. Like you wouldn't
believe. We've had a guy on the show, a listener who's doing it. Like he's still out there.
It's incredible.
Ryan, living in his van for months on end. And there's
it's amazing.
Part of that which appeals to me for sure. Total freedom.
Dude, I had a moment where I was like, I could do this forever. If I had a nicer, just a little bit more room, I could totally do this. And you meet people out there when you're doing it that are also doing it, which is cool. But yeah, I got in the van with my dog Peaches. It was a Corgi Yorkie mix. She's this tiny little nugget. She's my best friend. But yeah, I just went till I was tired. I started in Texas, went west first. Went to California first, just would go, did Route 66, slept in the desert in Arizona. One of my favorite memories, I think I've told Matt this before, is, I mean, you're out there, they have BLM land in this part of America, which is the Bureau of Land Management. You don't have to pay, but you can stay there overnight for no longer than a few days at a time. They have park rangers that are checking to see. It also feels like where dead bodies are probably buried. So there's this combination of beauty and kind of sketch, but we were getting ready to go to bed, Peaches and I. I'm like, I would just sit in the back of this van, it would get dark, and then I was in there when I was in the desert because I didn't want anything bad to happen. I didn't want to get, you know, whatever. I don't know what. There's stuff to kill you out there. There are animals that will kill you. So I was a little bit worried. So we're there. Peaches starts growling. I'm watching like Seinfeld on DVD back of this van, like drinking wine out of a can. I found canned wine. Like, I'm just like, I'm a mess. But there's a certain level where I'm loving it. It's dark. There's nobody else. I'm literally in the desert. Peaches starts growling. And I'm like, oh fuck, what is it? I think it's a person. I'm like, this is it. This is how I'm gonna go. I'm gonna get murdered out here. She eventually stops. I go to bed. I wake up the next morning, and there are mountain lion tracks all the way around, like just circling. This thing was just circling my van. I had food in there, and there's another animal, so you know. And I took some pictures. I put a quarter next to the print, sent some pictures to my dad and his buddies. And they're like, okay, yeah, that's not like a bobcat or something. That's a mountain lion. Please be careful. And I mean, there are countless stories like that where I'm a mess. I'm in a van in my pajamas, like peeing in a bottle, you know, all of the things that come with that. But I'm like really going through it. I'm in my own head. Like there's no escaping. Just there's no cell signal. That's the other thing out there. There's no cell signal. So you have to face whatever you're dealing with. There are no lights other than the lights of a candle or a DVD player or whatever you have in the back of that van. And yeah, it was the best thing I ever could have done, and I didn't know it because it forced me to deal with what I was going through in a very real way.
I love it. I think that's, to me, it's just as a writer and somebody who loves good film, it just seems like what a great way to deal with it. It reminds me of Neil Peart from Rush. When he lost his wife, he got on his motorcycle and just kept riding. And I kind of did the same thing when I was going through what I went through. It's just a process of like you said, dealing with it, but also like really finding yourself again.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the analogy is there's no light out there. You're literally sleeping through the darkness and finding your own light, you know, and if we could all do that, you know, as human beings, regardless of your, what you're going through, to take time to be alone, to listen to yourself, that inner voice, that's powerful. And I'm sure that, you know, you did find something because you wrote a record about it, and it's extraordinary. So I got a question. Were you living in the UK with her when this happened?
No, she was living in Texas with me.
Okay.
Yeah. We went through the
whole... She was from England, wasn't she?
Yeah, we met on tour there. And yeah, she came to Texas to get married.
Okay. So what... You don't have to get into the details, but how did that affect you? I mean, not just as a musician, but as a human being, like having your life established and then it all just kind of like gets pulled out from under you. What did that do psychologically?
Well, first of all, we can get into the details anytime you want.
Mine's an open book.
Whatever you want to ask, go ahead. But as a human being, you never think you're going to get divorced. This is the big lesson I've learned. You get married, you don't go into marriage going, well, we'll give it 10 years and then we'll get divorced. But
till death do us part, but probably not.
Yeah, till death do us part, or till you drive me crazy and then I'm out. But the thing I struggled with the most is feeling like a failure and a disappointment. And I somehow didn't try everything I needed to try, or I, you know, should I have done this different? Could I have done that? You really start to look back and you see these markers. I'm sure you did this, Jesse, too. You're like, oh, if I maybe should have paid more attention there to that thing, or, you know, and that was the big one for me, is going, you're not a failure. You know, there's also the church contingent. I had people that I grew up with still going to church 2-3 times a week that said, God forgives you for your divorce. Don't worry. And I was just like, you know what? Shut up. Like, hey, God forgives you for being an idiot. And like, come on. But that
didn't
help.
Did you get
help.
Any of that, Jesse?
Yes, I did. I'm laughing and nodding and smiling because I come from a religious home. My father is a retired minister. And a huge part of that was, you don't get divorced.
Yes.
So for me, it was a ton of like damage control and pushing forward and doing everything I could to a degree. And like you said, you look back on, you're like, wow, to me, I should have bailed a long, like way earlier than I did. But I just was like, that was drilled into my head. You fight for your marriage. You don't get divorced. Yeah. It's God's law. God frowns upon divorce. It was all this baggage that came with it. And to be honest with you, a part of that really sort of segregated me from the church community and the whole idea of some other human being telling me that I'm wrong for doing what I'm doing, when I was clearly in the right for doing what I did to get away. But a huge lesson learned, for sure. Yeah. But I get it. You try to fight for it because you, like you said, you don't think you're going to get divorced, but you know, hindsight 2020, it was the best thing to ever happen to me.
Yeah. Personally. Same. Yeah. Isn't that funny though? It's just like, you go, and it sounds like you and I went through a very similar struggle, just emotionally, what that does to you with the church contingent. But it's funny how you look back at it and you learn to be thankful for it in a way. And I definitely feel that, like I made it through and now I'm appreciative, which feels really weird. I have to say, I'm just like, oof, God, thank you for that, because that would have been really bad had it gone on any longer. And, you know, I would not have been good for anyone involved.
100% agree.
Ryan, you know, I found in my relationship history that when you're a struggling creative and you're really fighting and hustling every day to try and carve out a career for yourself, that in my life is what's really kind of taken its toll on my personal relationships. Do you think there was an element of that in your situation where Holly was just tired of being like your cheerleader? It's like, come on, man, you've been trying for all these years. Like, maybe it's never. Was there any element of that? Because I do look at people who are like successful, and obviously once you get fame, success, money, whatever, that doesn't eradicate all other problems. Mm. But I've just found in my personal experience, I'd love to know yours, whether you think that the hustle of being this independent, you know, mid-level successful person, you know, that is a very unattractive thing after a while for a partner, because they're just like, it's this guy again going on about this. Was there any of that at play?
So accurate. So much of that at play, because they, and no offense to my ex-wife, they think it's probably going to be a certain way. They see you, you meet on tour, whatever. The bigger the
you're
tour,
the rock star, you're going to the top.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm part of a community of singer-songwriter dudes that we're all doing just fine. Like, everybody's successful and happy, but we're in this kind of just below the real famous people, which is fine. Like, I'm thankful. I've kind of done that on purpose in a way, because I know where this kind of career that I'm having gets you. Like, it's not going to be that thing that whatever Adele, Justin Timberlake, whatever that is, like, that's not me. And I guess I was wrong in assuming that my ex-wife would know that, but there is a level of like, oh, so all our bills are paid and we can do some nice things and we're okay, but there's not a this or that or money to do this or money to do that. And I think that, not that the, it's tricky to talk about this, but not that the quality of life was bad, because it was good, but it wasn't what, I don't think, let me say it like that. I don't think it was what she hoped it was going to be. And yes, she did get tired of the hustle. And yes, I think she thought it was going to be whatever, but I mean, we were together for like 10 years. So I feel like if she had a problem with that, she maybe should have said something year one, not year 10. Like, no, this is how it is. This is what I do. And yes, it could get bigger, and it does gradually. It's like, I'm doing just fine. But
realization that comes with that as well, isn't there? Because you're like, man, did they ever like me? Or did they like this idea of me?
Yeah.
And that obviously is a huge dent to your, I mean, your ego in one hand, but just your soul. You're like, oh man, maybe like I'm not as lovable or, you know, awesome as I thought I was, but you know, maybe it's not actually about you. It's about your connection with that other person. And these are all the crazy things that you go through in that situation, aren't they?
Yeah, it's very true. And it's very hard, because you're like, hold on, did she just like bet on me at the beginning, thinking that I was gonna whatever? She didn't know really that I had already been through it in the music business and had that thing, the record label and smile and spend all the money and do all the thing. And then had kind of like settled on the kind of career I wanted to have. And I can't expect her to know that really. So I don't fault her, but there was definitely a level of that. And it sucks, because there is a level where I felt like a disappointment. Like, I'm sorry I wasn't famous enough or rich enough or whatever. There is a small part, but there is part of that factored into that relationship ending for sure.
I think if anything else, you know, I can speak from my experience. Well, internet.
You're good. Now you're good. Okay. That time you're good.
We got so it. Nervous now.
Okay. Every time you're like, yeah. No, you're good.
So for me, it made me change the way I look at relationships, and it made me to the point of like almost painfully oversharing with my partner now, my girlfriend, who's amazing, and like she taught me to be just brutally honest no matter what. And that situation, coming out of that divorce and like finding myself again and then coming into a new relationship, everything's different. And it's like we've gone through so much in my relationship now than I did in almost 18 years with this partner, because I refuse to not talk about things. I refuse to numb myself or get drunk on something or pretend that it's okay, or assume, like you said, the word assume. You assume things are going to be a certain way. You got to just lay it all out, as painful and as annoying and as problematic as it can be. Get it out, work through it. And then when you get on the other side of that is a whole feeling of satisfaction and security and like, you know, happiness too, because you don't have to worry. You're not sort of cycling of like, is this okay?
Yeah.
And there was a ton of that for me. Like it was never a stable ground to walk on, because I assumed it was okay. I don't know what the hell she was thinking, but
yeah.
And I think at a certain point, I just became a lifestyle for her.
Mm.
She loved the lifestyle. and took liberties and just sort of, when I'd go on tour, she lived a completely different life. And I was too blind to see it, or I didn't allow myself to see it. So a ton of lessons learned. And I think, I'm sure you can relate to that. And it's still fresh for you. You know, I'm talking about a few years now, but, and then you're able to go out on that road trip. Right. And I love that you shared on the documentary, you shared songs that you're like, I'm not sure if this is going to be something to put on the record, but in little snippets of that, I loved seeing that.
Loved seeing it. And then we lost you, dude.
How about now? God,
we got you. We got you. It's all horrible. Good, man. Don't let it throw you. This is what it is. We're having a good time.
We're bobbing and weaving here with the internet. I wish that documentary was longer. I really loved seeing that. And then seeing, then being able to listen to your new record that you wrote out of that. It just really spoke volumes about you sort of discovering yourself as a human being. And then as a songwriter too, and taking that sort of sadness and darkness and flipping it into a record, because not all of it is sad. Like I think you came to realizations as well through that.
Yeah, that was the big moment for me where I was like, this is gonna be a record. Because look, I've come to that. It's okay that it didn't work out. It's sad, and I hope you're okay going forward. That was the big thing for me. It was like, I want her to be okay and be happy, and it's okay for us to be sad that it didn't work, but then to wish the other one well. And it took that road trip for me to get to that place. But once that happened, and there was a song on that little documentary where I had that moment, it's like, oh, I've gone from my life is a wreck, how do I recover, to, okay, it's a mess right now, but it's a mess that's going to get cleaned up. And I hope she's okay. You know, we loved each other for a long time. And I'm not the first person in the history of the world to get divorced. It happens more than half the time. So I don't need to beat myself up any more than I did. I love that it turned into a record. And thank you for saying that about it, because I do think it's a hopeful record. It's a sad record, but it's a record about trying to figure out what happens during and after a divorce. And I was proud of myself, but that's the record I'm probably most proud of, just because it's that. It's like going through it and then coming out okay. It's like, we're okay. Like, everybody, we're okay.
Which record is this one, Ryan? Everywhere But Nowhere to Go?
It's Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. Matt, it's funny that you ask. It's this record right here.
There you go. I actually text that one to Jesse earlier. I said, this is my favorite of all Ryan's records. And there's a song on there called Can I Get an Amen, which reminds me of Primal Scream. It's got that euphoric kind of, and you know, that's another element at play in your songwriting, is there's the kind of Americana, country, and then 90s indie alternative. But there's also British rock, which you love. Jesse mentioned Oasis earlier. You love Oasis. In another one of your tunes, you say the drugs don't work, like Ashcroft said, obviously talking about the Verve. And I love that about you. And obviously, you know, having like an English wife and having the community of followers that you have in the UK, it's a real kind of close connection and relationship that you share with the United Kingdom, isn't it? As much as you're a Texan boy, like, you're a kind of honorary Brit as well.
Yeah, I do feel like an honorary Brit. And the way Smile Smile all went down, I was thrilled to go to England and start over. It's like, nobody knows about any of that. So let me try here. And I had a little bit of a leg up just with, you know, friends and connections in the music business there in the UK. But yeah, British feels like the country that saved my career, because I was just like, I'm trying this one more fucking time. And then I'm going to go be a mailman, because
you would have tried another time. Though. You know, you would have. You're like me, and that's why I love you. You would have come up with another obstacle, and you'd have gone, I'm still going ahead. I'm still plowing forward.
You're probably right, Matt. You're probably right. But it felt to me at the time, it was like, one more. I'll try it one more time. And I'm thankful that the UK went the way that it did and continues to, because it does feel like a second home, and I'm very thankful for it. And it was funny for a while, because my parents were doing the thing like, oh, you're big in England. Sure. I was like, no, like, come on tour. Like, and I took them on tour in the UK. They got to see.
Yeah, they got to see you play the St. Pancras Church, which is where I met them.
That was a fun show. That was an amazing night. That became infamous because we recorded a live record there, and I wanted to break the ice because it was in such a sacred setting. I don't know how Jesse's going to feel about this because we come from similar backgrounds. But
he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
I walked out into St. Pancras Old Church, sold out show, literally standing on a grave because there's burial grounds in this old church, stained glass windows, Jesus statues. First thing I said when that show started is, can you say fuck in a church?
That's awesome. I'm sure the place,
oh man, they went nuts, and that just set the tone for the rest of the night. And it was just one of those nights where it was a magic show. People still talk about that show, and people quote that to me all the time, because I do have other songs, can I get an amen and whatever, it's part of my life. And people will, you know, retweet a song like that with the hashtag or put it in quotes, can you say fuck in a church? And yeah, it was a good night.
Well, that was when we had the chat in the van, was right before that show, wasn't it?
It's true. And you know what? That chat was worth the shitstorm of afterwards. But, you know, I have to say, even though I told you probably the nice version of it all, I wanted to be respectful on a certain level, and I knew that I was going to get shit for it. But I'm proud of that conversation and the way we talked about it all, but nobody said anything. I guess I should say I didn't say anything, you know, shitty.
Yeah, I think you guys navigated that really well. I think it's a great talk. And again, for anyone who's listening, go back, listen to Life in the Stocks, the episode with these two. I think it's a great, great episode. And I love you did handle that very well.
It was tricky, but thank you.
As we approach the end, I'd like to talk to you about community, Ryan. Okay. You know, I think it's an important aspect of your personal life. You know, with the musicians you've kind of collaborated with, particularly in recent times. We just had Ginger on the show, Ginger Wildheart. You did a great tune with him. Fuck You Brain, talking about mental health. You're obviously now on Wicked Cool Records with Stevie Van Zandt. Your label mate is Jesse Malin, who's a mutual friend of mine, and Jesse's definitely somebody we're going to get on this show. And another dude that you're pals with, there's a funny connection here, is Drew Carey. Now, Jesse's bandmate, Adam D, was on The Price is Right, and he won. And it is one of the funniest things, like the clips on YouTube. It's you know, like, I guess, borderline viral if you're in the metal community. It's been, you know, viewed and enjoyed by many. What's your connection with Drew Carey, the American legend?
Yeah, so it's through Stevie Van Zandt, through Little Steven. Drew has a radio show here every Friday night called Drew Carey's Friday Night Freakout. And Drew was aware of me and my music a little bit. But once I signed to Wicked Cool and Stevie kind of took me under his wing, and I became part of that Little Steven, E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen umbrella, like community. Drew is also a big Springsteen fan. So it was just kind of that thing. I think, I don't want to speak for him, but where he went, oh, I know this guy, let me find out a little more. And we just started kind of texting and talking on Twitter and whatever. But it's rare whenever those relationships like that turn into real friendships, because there's a lot of entertainment friendships where you just kind of are, you just like the person, but you never really hang out outside of whatever it is you're doing together. And Drew went out of his way just to be like, come hang out. Do you want to come be on The Price is Right? You can be in the audience and then we'll go hang out. And then, you know, we've been to like music festivals together. It's just been really, I don't know. I love it because he's Drew Carey, but he's also like my buddy now. So he has actually, to his credit, the one that was like, you know, he acted, this is going to sound so weird, but normal. There's no celebrity there with Drew. There's no, like, he's totally down to earth. And he was just like, let's hang out. Like, it was no big deal to him. And he wanted to talk about music. And it's just been totally random, but we just really like hanging out with each other. We have a lot in common as far as the kinds of people that we are, and we just, you know, like to hang out. There's no ego. And the dude is the best, I have to say. He's just one of the best people I know.
That's awesome. Yeah, and he knows his music too, for sure.
He does. He's a huge music nerd. Like, he's taught me some things, and I'm a music nerd too, but Drew even like showed me some shit that I was like, what is this?
I love that.
Send you guys him have the that clip of Adam D on Price is Right.
Send it to me, man. I'd love to see it. Yeah, it was fun to be on that show and just be in the crowd. He was like, hey, I can't really have you come up and play because that's against the rules. You know, hey, my friend's coming on the show. We're going to win him some money. Like, that's
totally
not
changed the format of the whole like, long-standing show just for his buddy.
But it was fun just to be in the crowd and, you know, yell and do all the things. And yeah, he's a great, great guy. And I really do want to see that clip. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, Adam, so on tour, whether it's in the tour bus or in a hotel room, because I usually room up with him. We do two guys to a hotel room to save money, which is better than one room for everybody, which I use. But Price is Right is on every single day. It's part of he is obsessed with that show. And he you ask him to this day, the highlight of his career as a musician, he's like going on the Price is Right.
Oh, man.
You'll see in the clip, he loses his fucking mind on that show. He wins the whole thing. He wins the entire thing.
Maybe I have seen this. I feel like maybe I have seen
this. He's like, oh, he's yelling and jumping up and down. And Drew has no idea who he is, you know. And at, the end of it, at the end of it, I guess he had mentioned, oh, are you a musician? I didn't know.
Ryan, is Jesse coming back? Have we got him?
He's coming back. He froze just there at the end.
There you go.
Hey!
Do you got to get on that onto that service provider, Jesse?
I'm going to be angrily tweeting.
Someone's going to lose their job over this.
Ridiculous.
So the community which you're building around you as well, Ryan, is really something I'd like to hear your thoughts on in a similar sense to really what we're trying to do with this podcast. Like, we're aware that this is never going to be a Joe Rogan level show, but it's really about the quality and the core of the people who do tune in each week and like the support that we get from our amazing listeners. And I know that with you, like, especially in the UK, but I'm presuming to, you know, a fairly large extent in America as well, but you just seem to have amazing fans that have your back. And like, if you say, hey guys, like, I've got a single drop in today, it would really help me if this was like in the charts, you know, like all of that businessy stuff, which now dictates the industry, I guess always has, but it's even more vital now. You'll say online, like, and you'll humble yourself as well. You'll be like, guys, if you could pre-order or pre-save or download or buy this tune today, it would be a huge help. And they show up for you, don't they? They come out and they show you love.
They do. They're amazing. Everybody looks now at your, it's such bullshit, but you have to play the game. They look at your Spotify numbers or your social media following. And I learned that it's actually better. I mean, some of my friends have hundreds of thousands or millions of followers or whatever, right? But I've learned that it's better to have 6,000-7,000 where everyone will show up for you. You know, the Facebook page is only, but compared to some people, it's like 30,000. It's not a million. It's like this really kind of a quality over quantity sort of a thing that I've learned I prefer, because I want to be able to respond to everybody that I can. And I try to, it's like, I sometimes I'll spend, if there's a big release or something is happening and I just know, okay, this is going to get announced, there's probably going to be more traffic, I'm going to take the hour or 2 hours or whatever it is, and I'm going to respond to everybody. I'm going to sit down on my computer, I'm going to respond to every comment and every tweet. And again, that comes from Amanda Palmer and just learning that from her. But that has created that community, taking the time to make people feel seen. And they're always like, you remember my name? It's like, where did the music industry get so lost that people pretend like, have we met before? It's like, you're such a douche. Like, you know, you've met this person before. Okay, maybe you don't remember their name, but just like, why do some artists do that thing where they have that like mental block where they go, let me pretend like I'm such a big deal that I don't remember somebody who I've met several times. And I've never wanted to be that way. And I hate it when I see my fellow artists doing that sort of thing. And I have and will continue go up and go, I know you know this person. You've met them several times, whatever this is. Like, and it'll let everybody will laugh. Everybody will laugh. It's like, okay. But that creates that community, I think. Ginger's similar. Some of my artist buddies are similar, but they're not all like that. Some of them don't. They like their space and their privacy, and I respect that too. But for me, it's important to have that community and it feel like a family. And when you feel that with somebody, you want to show up for them. You feel like, you know, yeah, like I want to do this because I want them to be successful because they show up for me. So I'm going to continue to show up for these people. They're going to show up for me. I'm incredibly thankful for it. And I mean, it's resulted in the last two records charting in England, and like, which is wild to me that Nowhere to Go But Everywhere charted in between Taylor Swift and Neil Young. And it was like, and it's that community that people go look at my social media and they go, what? Like this guy? But all those people there, they show up.
I love it. I love everything you just said. It's beautiful. I want to be more like you.
Well, you guys have been crazy successful, so it's probably more difficult, you know, to say hi to everybody or respond to everybody. And so it I feel like you'd be, it would just be more difficult. So there is a level, and I love that. I love that you guys have had that. But yeah, I can see how it would be hard.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes it gets.
Oh, rewind, Jesse.
Sometimes it gets
really intense. Sometimes it gets intense with people reaching out to me. And I just don't have the energy or wherewithal, or even my mental health will just suffer if I continue to respond.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a level of that too. I've had to, only one person ever has had to be removed from a, like an after show thing, because when you do have that, and you,
that was me.
Yeah. It was Matt. It was Matt Birmingham. Too much to drink in the back.
You eat cheese sandwiches.
Not now, though.
Not now. He showed me the best. If anybody was following my social media over the time I was in Texas, you may have seen I picked up a Davy Crockett style raccoon skin hat and also a cowboy hat. Ryan helped me source both of those hats because that was his town, Fort Worth. He showed me the best time. And I reckon, dude, when we've said this to a few guests now, but every time we say it, we mean it because we don't say it to everyone. But when we do, as we hope to do, some kind of campfire style live Stoke the Fire event, especially if it's in the UK, if we can time it maybe around a tour and a time you're over here, or maybe a time you're making a record over here, we would love to come and have you play some campfire songs, man.
Because
your music, as Jesse said, is so in keeping and in kind of line with where we're at, of, you know, approaching raw and sensitive and delicate, sometimes sad stuff, but trying to do it in a way that's empowering and positive and uplifting. Part of the family, dude, and you continue to inspire me, and it's been really cool connecting you two today, and I knew you'd have so much in common and common ground, and it's clear that you do. So hopefully we can bring this trifecta to a real life event near you, watching or listening to this sometime soon.
I'd love it. You guys have been awesome. Jesse's, it's always nice to kind of bond with somebody over the way you grew up with the church thing. Like, a lot of people don't understand that. So to find somebody else that not only has been through that, but through a divorce and is in the music business. Yeah, that feels nice. So this has been really cool for me. There's a certain sense of comfort because we don't know each other. You know what I mean? But that brought a level of comfort here. Matt and I go way back now. We've been through some shit together, but this has been really great.
Yeah, total pleasure, honor. Sorry about the internet issues, but yeah, I can relate to a lot of what you've been through, and the whole church thing, we could do a whole episode on just that. The scars I have, but you know, I've taken some positive stuff from it too as well, but this has definitely been a pleasure, my friend, and it's been awesome to sort of get to know you prior to this through your music and the internet, and just to bring it all home with this.
Thanks, so, dude.
Ryan, can we tease your epic news, or is that still a long way off?
Oh no, I can't. You should leave this in here though, just so people can be like,
"We leave everything in. We don't edit at all." But yeah, but there is some epic news. So go follow the Ryan Hamilton. Is that your handle on everything? Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or have you got different ones for different platforms?
No, I think it's all at the Ryan Hamilton. There's a comedian named Ryan Hamilton too, and we had a funny thing for a little while, and I was like, "I'm going to be the." So
I didn't even need a blue tick. I'm just sticking that in front of it, and that's what's up.
Do whatever you want. All
in the episode description.
Yeah, you're on tour with Jerry Seinfeld. Fantastic. I will be the.
That's great.
Dude, love you, man. Absolute pleasure. And
love you too, Matt.
Continue to be you and do what you do, as I know you will. And we'll see you soon, dude. Thank you for today. It's been awesome.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.